Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard of FanRagSports.com and Trevor Sikkema of PewterReport.com. Here to talk some more draft history with you guys. I feel like we should name this segment, Trevor, like a week in draft history with John and Trevor or something. Like
travel as long as there's an ampersand in there, you know, to get fancy, then we're fine.
Yeah, that's good. Now I'm thinking.
See, we needed our own theme music, too. We should have planned this ahead.
Yeah, like an old school something. Yeah, theme music.
Yeah, like the – I don't know what the – this is embarrassing now because I'm going to get called out by the listeners. But, like, that piano that's, like, that super, like, old-timey piano. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
I don't know what it – I don't know what it's called, and somebody's going to call me out for it on Twitter.
I don't know
what
it is either.
Okay? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Some people are big fans of it. I don't know. We just need some old time, you know, some old school music to take us back in time to the 2014 draft when life seemed incredibly complex, actually, because there was opinions all over the board about this class. I mean, from Blake Bortles and whether he could refine his mechanics and whether his tantalizing upside could be reached, to whether Teddy Bridgewater's knees were too skinny, to whether Derek Carr was going to be like his brother under pressure, to whether Johnny Manziel could stay focused on the field, could be a competent quarterback at 6 foot, 207 pounds. You know, not a big prototype for his, what he offered. And so there were pretty substantial questions around all four of these guys. I don't think many had Derek Carr as QB1. And, you know, obviously I think because of Bridgewater's injury, there's somewhat of an asterisk there, but Carr's proven himself to easily, and I mean, not even close, be the best quarterback in this class.
Yeah. And, so, like, at the time, I definitely remember that the Bridgewater warfare was very real. Just from, really, it's one of the first times that I can remember where draft media, like us on Twitter, whether you would call it draft Twitter, and the NFL was so drastically different on a prospect that high.
Mm-hmm.
And Bridgewater, for many people, was not only the best quarterback in the draft, but was the guy that a lot of people wanted to take number one overall. And I was one of those people. Yeah. I thought that Bridgewater should have gone number one overall. I thought he was that good as a quarterback in college. I got to watch him for the first time, actually, against the 2012 Gators defense in that Sugar Bowl, which was a really good college defense. And Bridgewater, just cool as could be, was so clutch with his throws, was a true leader as just a sophomore in that game, I believe. And so I was impressed right off the bat from him, and then he went on to have some pretty great years at Louisville, and I thought that he had done plenty to be the top quarterback or even, you know, the safest quarterback in the class. But, of course, it's funny because it seems like that class, as polarizing as it was at the time, it played out almost exactly how we thought it would.
Yeah.
Because with Bridgewater, the thing about the NFL was they didn't trust his body type. They didn't trust that he wasn't going to get hurt, and here we are. He's, you know, 2 years into his career, and he's had a gruesome leg injury.
Right.
And, you know, he's been out an entire year. He almost had to, you know, I read at one point he almost like had to lose his leg because something that happened with
in practice. It was, but yeah, it was completely so, not, you know, the weird thing is, yes, they were right, but in a way they, you know, it was a non-contact injury. It could happen to anyone, you know. It was just kind of,
and that's why, like, I hate it. I hate it for him.
Yeah.
So I don't know what your thoughts on Bridgewater were.
No,
those were mine.
Yeah, he was QB1 for me. And I did jump into this class pretty late. I had been working, my job switched like right around, I think January it was, or late December, like one of the last couple of days in December. And I switched to like a kind of working more focused on the draft, and I hadn't had a lot of time to put into it before that. So I was, and I think the draft was like in March this year, if I remember correctly. It was like late March or something. It was when it was earlier. And they moved it back, I think, the next year, if I'm recalling correctly. But so I didn't have a ton of time to really sink into this class like I would have wanted to. But from what I had seen and what I did study kind of in my cram sessions, Bridgewater was QB1 for me. I was a big fan of what he offered. Yeah, I thought I didn't think of necessarily a super high ceiling, but I'm okay with that if you can be a guy who gives me winning football on the field. Like, I thought Bridgewater would be just a solid, you know, mid-tiers type starter, like in the NFL, like somewhere in that 13 to 18 range pretty consistently in his play. That was kind of my ceiling in terms of, you know, where he'd fall in quarterback rankings around the league. I didn't really think he would be a premier guy. I didn't really see a guy like that in this class. But I thought that, with a good offense around him, with talented pieces around him, I thought that he could be a really good, solid starter in the NFL. And there's a lot of value in that, I think, at the quarterback position. And so this was also the first year I kind of gave, the only year really that I gave, some push to quarterbacks based on their positional value. I didn't really do that. I haven't really done that in recent years. I've just kind of graded, like, if I thought you were going to be a solid starter, even though as a team I would take you as a quarterback way earlier because you need to for quarterbacks. I mean, that you have to reach for them somewhat. I would give them like a second, late second, early third round grade, something like that, because that's the kind of player like I thought that they could be in the NFL, sure. You know, that range. So this was the first time I kind of was just like, oh, quarterbacks, they're all going to go in the first round. I'll put them all, you know, so I put like Manziel and Bortles and Carr, like Carr was like maybe early second for me. Yeah, Carr was my fourth quarterback. I was going to keep that under wraps and see if we didn't get to that. But, that there it is. The truth is out there. Derek Carr was QB4 for me. And who knows what Manziel would have become if he'd ever been focused on the field. I mean, but at the same time, you know, that was something maybe we should have taken into consideration even more. I mean, the difference between he and Bridgewater as a person, holy moly, right?
Yeah, but it's so hard, though, because – and it's not just with quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, unfortunately, it matters so much more. But you get with a lot of these cases, these guys who are incredibly talented, who might have these off-the-field questions. And the problem with us not being NFL teams, not being able to really meet with these guys in a manner that matters, is that we don't know. I mean, we have seen – yes, we see things on the news, and we see instances that come out, and we can see things like that go public, but until you actually meet somebody, you know, shake their hand, look them in the eye, be able to question them, know their demeanor, how they answer questions, things like that, you really truly don't know.
Right.
And so you don't know whether mistakes that happened in the past are just mistakes or that's who they are. And so that's the NFL's side of the job, to do things that we really can't. But
because look at the next year's class. I mean, we're about to talk about Jameis here in a minute, and a lot of the same questions are asked to him, and we've gotten burned on that.
And so I will say that I believe my quarterback rankings were Bridgewater was for sure number one, and then I believe it was Carr, Bortles, Manziel.
Wow.
But
good for you, dude. That's freaking good.
But they were all, like, too high. Like, yeah. I will just say that. Like, they were all very close. Like, I should have had Carr and Bridgewater, even though Bridgewater has had the freak accident, I should have had them way higher than those other two. Mm-hmm. And instead, like, I didn't know how to separate or pull the trigger on either of them. So I kind of like, I got the order right, I think, but I didn't get the ranking right and how I should have ranked them. And that was definitely, you know, that class was definitely a learning class, and especially how it's played out. You can see maybe where you should have been more bold in how you assess quarterbacks. And, that was actually kind of the reasons why I really did not like Jared Goff when he came out. Mm-hmm. So
I think that this was a class that, like, for with Derek Carr, for example, like, where I learned a lot about, you know, there's an element to this that you can't really analyze pre-draft, because, you know, if Carr had gone to, well, let's say a team like his brother went to, and why I do think Derek's more physically talented. I mean, David was pretty freaking physically talented. If he had went to a team like that was a mess, and that offensive line was a mess, and, you know, been dropped 100 times in his first couple seasons, we're talking about probably a player that hasn't grown to the point that Derek Carr's grown to.
Oh, so sure. Yeah,
landing spot really matters, and it's really hard to predict for.
And we hate admitting that, right?
Yeah, it's true. You know,
we all hate admitting that when it comes to the prospects that we hit on.
Right.
You know, when we miss on guys, we can go, well, you know, not a great scheme, and the coaching staff, they're using them wrong and all of that. But, and then, like, when we nail a guy, we go, well, I saw it all along. It could have been happening on any club.
Yeah.
So, that's definitely something that,
whether especially you are right, for quarterbacks. Oh,
whether
man.
You are right or wrong,
Right.
There are factors outside of scouting that are major proponents in how someone's career plays out. And we hate admitting that because we never seem to, but that is just the truth. We are doing this because we are evaluating prospects as they are in college, and we can tell you what schemes we think they work best in. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, you being right or wrong often comes down to where they get picked. And a lot of times we don't like where they get picked, and that's just the way that it goes.
Right. Message from SeatGeek for you guys. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I've mentioned it before, but it's just incredibly helpful in the way that it organizes, sorts the information for you, gives you the seats with the best value at the top. I mean, there's just so many things about the SeatGeek app that just make the ticket experience, you know, buying tickets and trying to find the best spot and the seats together and, you know, all that stuff just makes it easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONFL today. That's promo code LONFL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Make sure you guys check that out. Trev, we got to talk about the 2015 quarterback.
Yeah,
class.
We do. Yeah.
But this might have,
basically
may have been
just the top.
Right.
Basically just the top, right?
Basically just the top two. Because this might have been the easiest class to evaluate that I've ever – I mean, we have only been doing this, you know, for a short amount of time. We're both relatively young. And I don't – this was just an easy – I mean, to me, like, I didn't even care. I didn't even have a top 100 grade on any other quarterback in this class. And I had Mariota and Winston both in the top 10, I think, like right 8 or 9 or something on my board. You know, right up near there, loved them both. Had Winston like a tad higher, but honestly, you know, Winston's a better fit for an offense like Derek Cutter's, where you go down the field a whole lot. Mariota's a better fit for West Coast type offenses, or, you know, to an extent, Arod Perkins types. So to me, there was just a lot of, you know, it just depended on the fit basically. And, you know, Winston, this off the field stuff did scare me, but I didn't know how to quantify it, you know, as a draft grade. So I just said, I think he's freaking crazy talented and could be a star.
Yeah.
Both of them have turned out pretty well so far, although I think this is a pretty big year for Winston to see if he was actually better than Mariota or not.
Yeah, I think fit, you know, fit's been great for both, and that's the thing. You know, I especially coming on to Pewter Report and working on with them and learning about what it was like, what the site was like, and the readers were talking about back when the Bucs had that number one overall pick where they took Winston. There was so much debate about this, and but at the end of the day, you know, I think that we can look at this now and be like, yeah, whether one went one or one went two, they went to the right spots, I think. And even for, like, for the culture of each team, I think that they went to the right spots. I still had Mariota slightly higher than Winston to going number one. And that was because the year before his final year was one of the best years for a quarterback like I've ever seen, like efficiency wise. I know Jameis won the Heisman and the national championship and had the crazy 40 touchdown, 9 interception year, which was great. But Mariota's like efficiency, like his completion percentage, how many yards he got, how many touchdowns he threw to how many, it was insane. And not only that, like I would watch Mariota just put balls pinpoint accurate. And that's why I kind of had him a little bit higher, because when you deal with somebody like Winston, there is a risk that you're taking. And we've seen early on in their careers, both of them 2 years in now, the narrative has stayed exactly the same. Winston is a guy who's going to take big risks. He's going to throw more picks than you would like him to, but obviously he's going to do the crazy plays that sometimes no other quarterback can do. Mariota is going to be different. He's going to rack up the yards. He's going to be efficient. He has one of the lowest touchdown to interception rates over the last, I think, 5 or 10 years. Like, these guys are who we thought they were early in their careers. Right. And I think both of them have shown that they're still young, good, young, promising quarterbacks too. So it's funny when we go back and we look at this, we think that sometimes the NFL draft is such a hard job, and then early in their years, it's almost they are exactly what we thought they were. So I think I had Mariota a little bit higher for that reason, but yeah, it is a big year for Winston here.
They're kind of good examples of when it all goes right, when, you know, when the situations are somewhat stable. And I do, to a degree, think both of them deserve a lot of credit, because I don't think they walked into the best situations in the league, for sure. But I think that they're both good examples of two guys that had really stable type skill sets and minds for the game, really good minds for the game, coming out. And I think how that, I mean, every year, the mental aspects of the quarterback position, it should be totally clear to us how important that is, right? I mean, Teddy Bridgewater and Derek Carr were both clearly there. There was talk about Blake Bortles from early on that he didn't put that time and the commitment into the mental aspect of things, to the mechanical aspect of things. And Manziel, we know how that story went. And then for both of these guys, I mean, Winston, Mariota, this is all they do. They play football, you know, and that was the question with Winston coming out. But Winston was such a strange and bizarre case, because he had significant off the field questions that were really troubling in some situations.
Right.
But he was such a charismatic leader with such a great personality, and just he's everything you want in a quarterback. If you didn't know any of the off the field stuff was the case, you know, you would just be like, this is my prototypical, you know, this is exactly what I want in the way a quarterback carries himself. And Mariota was the complete polar opposite of Winston.
Right.
Like, not charismatic in any way, incredibly quiet, but at the same time, you know, really focused in his demeanor and the way that he went about his work. And, you know, similar guys in that way, that they were super focused and smart and had a great head for the game. But every year, I think we see how vital that part is to quarterback succeeding. We got to give a hat tip to the rest of this draft class, right? I mean, this thing was just abysmal. Garrett Grayson went in the third round, the 75th pick. Not even sure we've seen him play at this point. Bryce Petty's been awful when he's been out there for the Jets. Brett Hundley was in the fifth round. He was my QB3, actually, but I had him in like the fourth round, I think.
And he actually, I remember I wrote lower. An article at one point, very, very early, very early in a process, and it was like, can Brett Hundley go number one overall? And I said, yes, he could. And this was like this is probably basically a year out from the draft that actually happened where he got drafted in. But I remember writing an article where he could go number one overall.
Why? What made you?
That was a miss for me. I just, you know, like, big, tall guy, somewhat mobile, played for a vertical offense, had the arm, like, and then he just kind of like super fell off. And I was like, well, there went that.
Hey, don't feel too bad. Kyle Krabs over at NDT Scouting, he's going to be mad at me for bringing this up. He had him. I think he had Hundley fourth or fifth overall on his board.
At the end of the year?
Oh, yeah, at the end of the year in his final draft.
I mean, like, yeah, I was probably – I don't think I did a top 100 that year, but I remember believing in Hundley enough for him to go number one overall at some point. So I feel you, Kyle. I do.
I don't even remember who I had as QB5. I think it might have been Grayson. But then Sean Mannion was a freaking third-round pick, dude. Try and wrap your mind around that. Oh, my gosh, he's horrible. Trevor Siemian was the seventh round pick. He's ended up better than all those guys, and he's still not good.
Chad Kelly's gonna be better than everybody too.
Oh my goodness, get out of here with that. We didn't even talk about the 2014. You know, pour one out for these guys. Pour one out for Logan Thomas. Pour one out for Zach Mettenberger, baby. Taj Boyd. Pour one out. AJ McCarron still might have a shot here.
Zach Mettenberger was the strangest case.
Oh, he was terrible. I was very anti-Mettenberger.
Yeah.
I was very anti-Tom Savage for where people projected him to.
I didn't know what to do. You mean first round?
Yeah. Remember that? Definitely ghost, pour one out for Tom Savage.
Ghost first round quarterbacks, Tom Savage, Davis Webb.
Yep. And Tom Savage is about to lose his job to Deshaun Watson here in camp, so we can pour two out.
Because Deshaun Watson is better than he is. I think I read that this morning, that somebody was like, oh, you know, Bill O'Brien said that Deshaun Watson is progressing more than any rookie should. And I'm like, it's as if a guy we watched play the biggest games in college football over the last 2 years and won probably all but one of them and still played like a beast in that game. Right. It's like that guy's good. I know. Shocking.
Yeah.
Very shocking that the quarterback who led it all to two national championships, basically should have won both, could have been undefeated the whole time, is good.
If Clemson's defense doesn't blow coverages, like, it's their job. I mean, O.J. Howard had, like, how many times is he just wide open now? And everybody
he almost had, 200 yards, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, if they didn't blow coverages consistently, Deshaun Watson would be
a back-to-back national champion.
Yes, 100%. Because he was that they were better, except for just a couple plays here and there, and
that's a guy who, when you talked about the mental aspect of quarterbacking, I trusted Deshaun Watson so much in this draft class. Like that, come on, how do you not? He played in the biggest games. What more do you want from him?
And I think we even see that with 2016 class to a degree. Look, Carson Wentz, what the stuff he was doing pre-snap and preseason and blowing the coaches away enough that they felt comfortable enough to trade Sam Bradford. And I mean, that was just huge what he showed in that. And Dak Prescott, I mean, geez, that was one thing.
Yeah, talking about Dak.
I mean, I was not about Dak as a prospect, but there was no denying the mental aspects of the game. Phenomenal in that regard. And
I didn't pay enough attention to Dak in that aspect, I guess, because his last year, just because I covered the SEC for a couple of years there, so I was watching almost every single SEC game every week. And Dak, I would get better here and there, but the thing was is that, and this is an area where I miss, that it's good self-evaluation as somebody who does scouting. I saw Dak Prescott get better at a lot of little things, and get better at playing quarterback, and I didn't choose to believe it. Like, I watched some people write that he was getting better and that he was, climbing up their boards and he could be a good quarterback. But then a lot of the, again, it was a lot of the national narrative, a lot of the big time scouting guys who had still had him down in the rankings, and they're like, no, there's no way. And I was just like, yeah, maybe there's no way, I guess. But I saw the little hint. Not that nobody could have seen this from him.
Yeah,
That year was incredible. But I saw a little hints that, hey, you know what? Maybe he could be a decent quarterback in the NFL. Maybe a backup, a situational starter. I don't know. And I just didn't choose to believe it because the narrative was so against it. And so that was a little self-evaluating moment for me when Dak started to go off. I was like, man, I kind of saw the little hints there and there, and I just didn't choose to believe it. So you got to trust your eyes, folks.
Yeah. No, he was definitely one of those cases for me where I was like, well, clearly, I mean, everybody, he got better in college, we talked about that, but even his senior year wasn't to the degree that you really would have wanted it to be for a guy who was going to be a top 100 pick. There wasn't a lot of arm upside, it didn't seem like. So it was just like, what's the best case scenario with this kid? There were some crazy inaccurate passes. I just remember being like, this is too troubling for me. I don't know that I can take somebody this inaccurate, they're this sporadically accurate, real high in the draft, and then I don't know. Things got way better. real quickly, which doesn't happen very often.
Landed in the perfect spot, too.
Yeah, landed another great landing spot. Scott Linehan had taken over that offense, which, someday we'll talk about Jason Garrett on here when people are ready for my Jason Garrett takes. But
Wow.
Linehan had taken over that offense, which was clearly, moving them in the right direction. And he did wonders with Dak, too. So, should have seen the upside, a lot of signs, that you should have paid attention to, I think. But it was hard. I mean, his evaluation was a tough one because, I didn't like any quarterback in the 2015 or 2016 class. I really didn't. Jared Goff was QB1, but he was a mid second for me.
Dude, I did not like Goff at all.
Yeah. There was not even really anybody I was considering the first round. To me, if Goff landed in the perfect situation, he could be a poor man's in that where Bridgewater was, I said in the 13-18 range, somewhere in there. He would be, if he landed in the perfect situation, his peak would be that 16-20 range, somewhere in there on a consistent, which for some teams is really valuable. But
do you have the list? Do you have the list of quarterbacks that were drafted that year? I'm trying to think of who.
Goff,
name them all.
Okay. In order, it was Goff, Wentz, Paxton Lynch late in the first round. Christian Hackenberg, you already know. And then in the third round, Jacoby Brissett, Cody Kessler over Dak Prescott. In retrespect, Cardale was in the fourth.
I think I had
I had Cardale.
Paxton was my number one, I believe.
I had Paxton number two.
I had Paxton. I think I had Paxton one, Wentz two. Oh, I might have had Cardale three.
I had Cardale three, but I had him ahead of Wentz. I wasn't a huge Wentz guy. I mean, well, here's how Wentz started out for me, okay? Back in, like, October.
I just didn't know who else to put there.
Yeah. Back in October, some people were talking about Wentz, you know, a couple people here and there, but he wasn't, you know, nowhere near, like, first-round pick or first-pick conversation. Yeah. And so I watched him, and I wrote about him, and I said, this guy would be a great day-two developmental pick. Like, you know, he does a lot of things really well. I really like him. And I thought I was, like, starting Carson Wentz Hive. And then everybody started saying he was the first overall pick, or he should be in that conversation. And I was just like, wait, what? So things got away from me real quick. Then I went from being Carson Wentz Hive in like October, November to like being like, whoa, 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 let's pump the brakes on Carson Wentz. And actually his rookie season was encouraging to me, and he manned up. I had him as a late second, early third round range, and he manned up outplaying that. But yo, I would not have, you know, again, what they, both those two teams at the top, the Rams and the Eagles, did to get, to move up and get those guys was not the route I would have gone. Yeah, because I just didn't feel like there was a big enough difference. You know, and then, you know, right now, this, based on the little bit we've seen from Paxton Lynch and Connor Cook, some disappointing stuff there. Cody Kessler's kind of who we thought he was.
No, Connor Cook was my QB1.
Oh, wow. I didn't like Connor Cook at all.
Cook was my QB1. Paxton Lynch was number two. Wentz number three. Cardale was four. Goff and I think five. Goff was five.
Ooh.
Yeah, Connor Cook is my QB1.
I still like Cardale Jones. I do. I still think he can develop. We'll see what happens. I mean,
old 12 gauge.
Certainly very, very doesn't look very good right now. But I had him in the mid to late second round range because I think he was right ahead of Carson Wentz for me. But I thought that there were times where his accuracy looked really on point, and I got excited about him. But
don't trust an Urban Meyer quarterback.
Yeah. I know. This might be
lesson learned.
And that
goes for this year, too. JT Barrett's bad.
Yeah. So there you have it. Our thoughts on the quarterback classes leading up to this past one, where, you know, we both had Deshaun Watson as QB1, Hive, because he was, and because he will prove to be out on the field as well. So early signs, I haven't heard anything from Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't even know what's going on there. So I need to look and see how he's doing. Trubisky, I've heard lots of good and lots of bad, like, you know, up and down, which is exactly what I expected at this point. I heard Kizer was coming along faster than expected. That's good.
It's Browns camp. Can't trust any media member.
Yeah, but wouldn't.
No,
wouldn't.
I'm out.
And against the Browns secondary, sure. You know, you and I could look pretty decent. So we'll see what happens in preseason games. It'll be fun to watch these guys. But, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow with a little Fan Friday action. We'll answer some questions. And then we dive into the good stuff, the college football previews next week. And looking at some of our positional rankings before the season gets started. As always, man, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.